This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me on Twitter at Conkers3. And I'm here with my good colleague Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is podcast number 60, our 60th anniversary, although we've done a number of podcasts which were part one and part two. So in fact, we've probably done about 64 or 66 podcasts thus far. Thank you for coming back to us. Thank you for your encouraging words and continued support of this podcast. We're absolutely blessed to have listeners in around, I think it's 92 or heading towards 94 different countries around the world. So it's great to have a global audience. Clearly, we've got lots of expats. expats.
Is that people who just be called Pat?
Yeah, Pats as well. All over the world. So yeah, thank you for coming back to us, and I'm really, really pleased with the feedback we've had for Jace at StealthServe. He was absolutely phenomenal in the last podcast we recorded 2 weeks ago in episode 56, 59, even if you've not listened to it already. Thank you for that feedback. We're really, really encouraged by the feedback we've given. We love having guests on there, and we'll bring you some more guests going forward. So what were your thoughts about 59, Pete?
Oh, I mean, I'm a big fan of Jason. So, you know, it was music to my ears when you told me that he was going to be on it. I mean, it was really interesting, actually, because, you know, we had in the early sort of feedback to the podcast, we had a couple of sort of dissenting comments that weren't quite so, you know, impressed with it sort of thing. But then we found that actually it generated loads of interest and loads of really positive responses. And Jason, you know, Jay said to me that he'd had, you know, quite a few people contact him and whatever afterwards, you know. So, and I was trying to think what was the difference. And I sort of wonder if it's really a difference of styles. I think the people who are more fundamentals-based investors who just focus on the companies and don't have any interest in charting or technical analysis or whatever didn't find it particularly exciting and interesting, whereas the guys who have more of a technical leaning or like myself, like yourself, mix the two disciplines, so you know, you mix fundamental analysis with the sort of technical side and whatever, I think those people found it more interesting, you know.
Yeah, I think the beauty of it is, Pete, is that there's lots of different takeaways. I think the two main ones for me, or three even, was the averaging up only, right? Not averaging down, never averaging down, right?
Yeah.
Cutting out the noise, right? There's all this chatter, ramping, complete BS on Twitter, and people who have got the most influence or got loads of followers come on and say, I've bought this stock, right? And people go, oh, X, Y, and Z's bought that stock, so therefore I'm buying it. Jace is like, forget all of that noise. Ignore all that noise, right? This is, I look at the fundamentals a little bit, but essentially I'm looking at the chart, and the charts and the markets tell me what to do with the stock. And that is it. Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I really like that. I mean, The thing that just sticks in my brain, I kept talking about this on Twitter, was that thing when Jay said, I hate each of my stocks equally. I just thought that was brilliant, because that really sums up my thinking, where I think this idea that we can, you know, have high conviction position and whatever, and I think it's quite dangerous thinking, and I'm not sure it really happens in reality. I think it's very easy for us to overanalyze, overthink, over fall in love with a stock, and we sort of get really high conviction to this stock, and we let the position get ridiculously overweight, and then of course we're heavily exposed when the damn thing gives a profit warning, you know. So I think the approach of, you know, having a good spread of positions And as you say, letting the market tell you when to add to that position is certainly more the way I'm happy to be. And it is the way I've sort of drifted to over recent years. You know, if I buy a stock and it just sits there and do nothing, well, I'm not going to buy more of it, am I? But if I buy a stock and it starts moving up, then I'm interested to buy more.
Yeah, I'm guilty as charged, Pete. You know my positions with various stocks, and clearly, you know, you've got some people who aren't that diversified with their portfolio. They've got less than a dozen stocks, and they're wedded to that one stock. And heaven forbid somebody comes out and says anything objective or not bullish about that stock. It's like a fatwa, you know what I mean? You're cursed. You know, you've got somebody out to cut your head off. You know, you've got to say something bullish about that stock or else. You know, and there's people talking about, oh, you know what, be nice, be kind, be this, that and the other. But it's all about, let's be nice and be kind about the stocks that I'm in. You know, I can talk rubbish about every other stock, but please be nice about my stock. There's that inconsistency and lack of transparency, you know, and I think we should be equally objective about every stock. It shouldn't matter whether it's AstraZeneca, it's my largest portfolio or not. Let's be objective about it. Let's be objective about every stock, not just the stocks that my mates are in. Yeah, let's not be negative about stock because I don't have it. You know what I mean? Let's not be negative about stock because someone else has got it and they're doing well out of that stock, but I didn't get into it early enough, so therefore I can't say anything positive about it because I've missed out on the joyride of the stock being up 300, 400, 500%, and I've missed out on that. You know what I mean?
No, you're bang on. I mean, I think the way I try to do things, but obviously because of, you know, human biases and stuff, and the wheelie brain is not, you know, not perfect when it comes to biases. My God, it's got a few.
You and me both, mate. You and me both.
But you know, it's like where I, you know, I try to give an objective, rational, honest view of what I think of a stock. And I always do that, whether I'm on Twitter or whether I'm down a pub talking to mates, whether I'm here on a podcast talking to you, whatever I'm doing, you know, I always try to give my, and I may be wrong, and I'm wrong a lot. You know, I'm getting things wrong constantly. But, you know, I do try to be objective, and I will change my mind if the situation changes, you know. So I think, and I think that's really important. It's like, you know, when you have got it wrong, realize why you've got it wrong, where you've got it wrong. And if the situation has changed, maybe it's a stock you should be buying now rather than being wedded to this old position where you sort of misunderstood it or you didn't see a change come in or whatever it was.
I agree with you, Pete. I think the concerning thing for me is the fact that some people are wedded to a stock and sometimes it's completely the wrong kind of stock to be wedded to. And it's not just about cyclical stocks. Yeah. It's about the fact they're just completely in the wrong market, or that the management of that company have been telling shareholders for some time that they're going to be doing that, they're going to be doing this, they're going to be executing, and they simply don't. A key to that, Pete, is SO4.
Oh yeah, was that
which has just Popeye. Gone? Essentially, it's gone into administration, has it not? You know.
Oh God.
So you've got that company now, which has cost, you know, long-term shareholders or any recent shareholders. I saw people trying to buy that last week and a couple of days ago, and I was like, please don't go into that stock. But you know what it's like on Twitter. You say something about a stock, and people just get very, very aggressive about it. So Salt Lake Potash has essentially gone into administration, you know. So that's another one which was championed by lots of different people at various different stages of its life, and essentially that's gone now. But people are buying that this week, Pete.
Some people
buying it as a punt. You know, going to flip it for 10% and or 50% or multi-bagging it at some stage. And I'm not sure if it will ever come back. It's gone into voluntary administration, so I'm not sure what that means. But you recall we had a conversation about Carillion in the past, Pete, and there were lots of people buying that the day before it was that share got suspended. So that's another example of stocks which people have got into very, very late because it's down 99%, so therefore it can't go down any more.
This is
it's just happened. So
I'm literally shaking my head with disbelief. It's the classic thing, and I come across this so often. Exactly what I was saying earlier. You know, why add to a stock that's, you know, that's not moving up? It just makes no sense. And so the corollary of that as well is, why buy a stock that is a falling knife, that is just dropping? I mean, I generally, I know you're a bit different, Pete, but for me personally, I generally don't like stocks that are down low. Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, I don't mind a stock that's down low, but I want it to have sort of formed some sort of base and be starting to move up and sort of breaking out to the upside, a bit like what Jason was talking about. Then I'm interested in it. But when it's still in this falling knife stage, which obviously SO4 was, which obviously Carillion was, when they're in this falling knife stage, if you're buying them, you're just asking for trouble.
It is, Pete, but I think what it is, if you take the traders out of the situation, I think myself and some others, we do the research, right? And we're picking over the bones almost, Pete, and we're thinking, you know what, if the management do this, if the management do that, if the money comes in and they do this, that, and the other, then this is survivable. But the difference is sometimes you've got to look at what company is this. It's actually essentially a mining company, Pete. Right?
That
It's
hasn't probably got much.
it's not selling anything yet. It's
Oh, so
not
it's not
got.
even producing or anything.
Pff, mate, if it were producing, it wouldn't be so bad, would it? I think it's another one of them companies, mate, that you have to look out for. It's pre-production sort of stuff, mate, and you have to be very, very confident that these people are going to get something out of the ground. It's a lot of sticking things, what do you call it,
So much
flags into the
can go
ground sort of
wrong.
situation, Pete.
So much can go wrong. Sorry, mate, you were saying?
It's the same. It's when these companies stick flags in the ground and they've got, assets, but it's a case of what assets does it mean? What is it? Somebody else will buy that up. It's a bit like SXX. Remember that one?
SXX.
Serious Minerals. It's lots of money spent on doing this and doing that, but has it actually generated any money out of the ground yet? And then it's gone.
So it's the classic problem. So it sounds like falling knives have managed to stab a few people yet again.
Yeah, and my condolences to everybody that's in SO4, and especially the ones that hung on and hung on for dear life, listening to what the management was saying and thinking that they were gonna, get something out of this eventually. But I don't think that's going to be the case. And what I'm going to do later in this podcast is probably talk about a couple of stocks that I've got on my watch list, if there's time, Pete, which I don't hold, with a view to some people maybe be able to recoup some of those losses by getting into some more solid companies, and maybe able to do better with some of the stocks that are out there.
Well, I'd like to think that all of the stocks that we tend to talk about on the podcast, in terms of ones that we say we quite like, tend to be ones where you've got some chance of doing all right. They're not going to be. I mean, if we talk about something that's very, very, very speculative, we would make that clear, you know?
Absolutely, we would.
Yeah, and if
Absolutely, we
we
would.
say something's really speculative, people have got to realize that it's not something you put all of your portfolio into. And no one should ever just buy something blindly because something they hear on a podcast somewhere.
And no one should be buying any stocks that you and I talk about, Pete. They should be going away
Exactly.
and do their own research,
Exactly.
as we always stress. But I think, unfortunately, there are some people out there that use their platforms, use their blogs, use their Twitter handles to promote the stocks that they're in. And then a couple of weeks, a couple of days later, whatever it is, they say, "Oh, I've sold that stock." It's like, oh, it's like, what?
Yeah, if they mention it, mate,
Oh,
they don't even.
that's if they mention it. Yeah,
Yeah, they
absolutely.
don't even usually even bother saying they've sold it. So yeah, crazy. Hey, mate, what do you think of the markets then?
The markets, mate. It's as I said, either the podcast before last or whatever, or the one with Jason. Definitely the one with Phil and John. It seems to be climbing a wall of worry, Pete. We're sitting here at the top end of the trading range for the FTSE 100, at the 52-week highs. 52-week high is 7,234. Today, the intraday high was 7,229, and it closed at 7,223. And there's lots of different bits of talk, really. And the bits that I noticed today, that I thought, the market's going to have a really good day today, and it just seemed to end up flat. And I'm not sure if you caught up with that a bit of news, Pete, but Chancellor Rishi Sunak, we haven't mentioned his name for a little while, Pete.
Oh, Richard.
He came out and basically was saying that, well, he didn't come out and say, but there was rumours, sorry, that he's going to come out and use next week's budget to announce intentions to reduce the UK bank corporation tax surcharge, right?
Yeah.
From 8% to 3%.
Yeah.
Right? But this
so that's
is,
like an extra tax that's on top of standard corporation tax.
Corporation surcharge, yeah.
To punish the banks for all the problems they caused 10 years.
Absolutely. But you remember the banks, you know, the banks help the whole government with everything, don't they? So they've helped them out, scratch my back and we'll scratch yours sort of thing. But that wouldn't kick in potentially until 2023.
Oh.
If you look at the movement of, or lack of movement in Lloyds, NatWest, HSBC, Barclays and the other little, you know, smaller banks like Virgin and all the rest of it, they barely moved today, Pete.
That's funny because Lloyds, yeah, also had some news about closing branches that used to be Halifax. So you'd have thought the market would have liked that. And it's down today, down 0.7.
Yeah, they're just flat. I think there's other,
but you know what?
Other worries, mate, whether there's the COVID worries or the inflation worries and all the rest of it. You know, you had, I always get his name wrong, Andrew Bailey, the governor of Bank of England. He warned that we'll have to act soon enough regarding inflationary pressures. So you would have thought, okay, if he's suggesting that the UK interest rates are going to go up, that would have helped banks, but the banks haven't really moved much this week. But the thing that made me almost, I was like raging a little bit, Pete, and I tried to stay calm and be mindful throughout the
calm
day.
Calm down, mate, calm down.
I was reading something about farmers and various other industries. I think it was like trying to get people to come and pick, you know, vegetables. You think we're going to end towards Christmas soon and we're going to get the sprouts out of the ground and all the rest of it, Pete?
Yeah.
Offering £30.
Hey, you don't get sprouts out of the ground. They're on the plant.
On the plant, sorry. You know what I mean? The cauliflower, maybe. Okay.
No, you don't dig up cauliflower. I think we need to do a gardener's podcast.
Gardener's podcast.
Because you're clearly struggling in that department. Mate, when the world goes to you know, what is it, handbag in a handcart, whatever it is, Helena handbag or whatever it is, when that happens, mate, you'll need to know how to grow your vegetables.
Definitely know. So going back to it, vegetables, Pete, just picking the vegetables for the next 2-3 months for Christmas and all the rest of it. Got a situation where they're offering £30 an hour for people to pick the veg. They can't get enough people.
I might go and do that.
Can't get enough people to come and pick veg, Pete. Yeah? Because it's hard work and no one wants to do hard work. Everyone wants to be an influencer or on Instagram making money just sitting on the computer. Nobody wants to earn £30 an hour these days. Yeah?
Amazing times, mate. Amazing.
Amazing times. So that's one of the inflationary pressures, Pete. We're going to see it on the table, on our food carts and our trolleys and on our tables when we get to Christmas. The cost of actually doing the Christmas shop is going to be incrementally higher if we can actually get the stuff on the shelves, if it's not stuck in a shipping container somewhere.
Yeah, well, exactly. If it ever gets to a shipping container. I heard that thing. I've heard, you know, a few things about Bank of England rate and whatever. And they're talking about a possible rate rise fairly soon. I think it was like maybe in the next sort of month or so. But then they were saying that maybe next year we could see interest rates get up to sort of like positive 0.5% or sort of up to 0.75%. It was something like that. So they were, so basically there was this trajectory that interest rates are likely to rise in the UK. The thing I find a bit strange about that is I'm not actually convinced it will make much difference to inflation, because I don't think we're talking about the sort of inflation that is caused by excess demand, because I don't think there is excess demand. I think the inflation is a supply crunch problem where there just isn't enough supply.
I can't see
that raising the interest rate is going to make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. This is lack of supply, you know, and lack of actually getting the stuff that we actually need. We saw what happened with the fuel prices spiking briefly when we had that little crisis. You know, we couldn't get enough drivers. The one thing I see sticking, Pete, because it's hard to unstick it sometimes, are the wage increases that we're seeing across the board in almost every single job, going across industries. And once those go up, Pete, I don't see them coming down. So that could cause increase in capex for every single industry out there. So that could stick. But I agree with you. I really can't see interest rates going up before Crimbo. And whether they'll go up next year a little bit, possibly. But because we could have another year of 2022 where the interest rates don't go up. I think there would be a wait and see. There's enough companies out there that are facing difficulties as we speak that, you know, that individuals, families, you know, people out there that are single, that are trying to get buy a property. If things go up and interest rates go up and it makes it more expensive to actually own a property, buy a property, rent a property, I don't see that working in the government's favour at all, you know.
No, that's the trouble. I mean, I guess the logic behind it would be that if you raise interest rates a bit, then in theory it should support sterling. So it means that stuff we import, and let's be honest, we import a lot of stuff, might be fractionally cheaper. I think that's the logic, you know, because it might straight from the pound. But the trouble is, it isn't that simple. It's not cause and effect. You know, you could raise interest rates and still find that sterling keeps falling. It's not that simple.
Absolutely.
Mate, I was going to say on the markets in, you know, the FTSE 100, and I also saw it on the Lloyd's price. The thing that I found really interesting technically is that, I mean, if you look at Lloyd's over 3 months, yeah, on a 3 month chart, it's basically for like, I don't know, 5 weeks or something, just gone up in a lovely uptrend. And if you look on a 3 year chart, so we're talking about sort of 1.5 years, it sort of went up to about 50p, just over 50p, the mid price. Then it sort of came back, and now it's back up near 50p again. It's at 49.5. And it looks to me, and this is the same on the FTSE 100, it sort of like jumped up, and then for the last 5 days, it's really been wiggling sideways. So it's quite possible that's forming like a bull flag, like a consolidation, before it then manages to push higher again. So, you know, I won't be surprised if the FTSE 100 manages to keep sort of melting up, if you see what I mean.
That's a good call, Pete. I've just looked at the chart there, and you're going back to February 2020, Pete, when it was last sitting at 50 pence. So 22nd of February 2020.
Yeah.
I think the breakout trend following sort of individuals, we were looking for it to have a day above 50 pence.
Yeah.
And then it could be away to the races because a lot of those individuals will be buying that stock. So we're sitting now at 18 plus, 22 month sort of resistance level. 50p, more buyers start getting into Lloyd's. And it will only take a little bit of news for that to pop above 80. And then you might get a run then. Up to 52, 55 sort of range.
Yeah.
But it needs to get above 57p, and that will attract new buyers again. And then you've got the situation again, true breakout pre the levels of going back to December 2019 is 65 pence, Pete. Yeah.
So what you're saying is, if it can close above 50p, we'll probably get the 65p fairly soon.
You've got that.
It's got to push through.
Yeah, you've got all the different metrics there. 52, yeah. 55, 60, and then completely new highs, 2 year highs, is at 64.5 pence.
Yeah.
And next year, if things go right and the market sort themselves out and COVID doesn't lock us down again, you know, there has been muted talk about all the relaxation rules about allowing them to pay dividends. That's what's caused the share price to move up throughout 2021, about, you know, reintroduction of dividends. So if they're able to do that in 2022, you've got a 65 pence stock there, mate, potentially, if anything else doesn't go, you know, against it.
Have you got SharePad open?
Nope.
Let me just beam mine up a second. I just wanted to look.
Whilst you're doing that, Pete, I'll just touch on the FTSE All Share. That's sitting at 4,118. I'm always talking about the 4,000 level when we spoke last time, so that's a good move up since it last touched that level. The high, 52-week high on that is 4,144, so it's only 26 points away from that. And again, they're all sitting nearer to the one-year highs for that sort of level to be teased out. And it won't take much. But equally, it as always, that could prove to be resistance for all we know. Yeah, it just can't get past its own nose, sort of thing. So have you got SharePad open, Pete?
Yeah, I'm just looking on SharePad now. On Lloyd's, it's got a forecast PE of 6.5, mm-hmm. a two-year forecast PE of 8.4. But a really interesting bit, and I know listeners will find this interesting, is it's got a forecast yield of 4% and a two-year forecast yield of 5.1. And that's at 49p. So, yes, I mean, yeah, those numbers are pretty attractive. So if people are happy with the fundamentals of the company and the technical outlook certainly looks quite interesting, then that might work out well, that one.
Yeah, I think people need to watch the metrics on that. And as Jay said in the previous podcast, if you've got some stocks hitting new highs, you know, those are the ones to add to, not the ones hitting new lows. You know, I've made the mistake, quite a few times on adding to stocks which I've thought fundamentally they're very, very strong. Why? What are they doing down here at the bottom? And it's cost me dearly. You know what I mean? So
this is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Oh, I know, mate, I know exactly what you mean.
My plan going forward is that between now and the new year, is that the ones that I've added to, irrespective of what position that they're in, and they've not done so well, I'm going to get rid of a lot of them, Pete. I'm going to start 2022 with stocks that are in profit, that are doing okay, and I'm going to weed them out throughout the course of 2022. And the ones that aren't strong, I'm going to get rid of. I'm going to keep adding to my positions that are strongest, not my weakest.
Well, that's interesting. So what's brought about these thoughts?
Well, I've been thinking that anyway, because I said to you earlier on in the year that I'm moving up the food chain. So I had my speculative stocks. I've had 10 takeovers since the 2022 lows. And what I've been doing with that is buying FTSE 350 stocks. I've bought insurance-related stocks, financial services stocks, AI stocks. Stuff that's going to be doing well in the current situation, including energy related sort of stocks. I don't always talk about those stocks. I just want them to do what they need to do. I've had some good news as well today regarding my lithium play. I'm hoping to announce that before Crimbo when it becomes a 10 bag of stock. I've got my core holdings that I'm happy to hold. And I've kept the faith with some stocks because you've got to have patience with some of these stuff, Pete.
But
equally, you've got to decide at some point, you know what, this has done nothing for a year and a half, and it's down 50%, it's down 30%, it's down 40%. You know, when do you give up on that stock and say, I've got to move on? Because there's an opportunity cost as well. The longer you're in that stock and it's going nowhere, that could be making money for you somewhere else. So that's opportunity cost.
So
people don't talk about opportunity costs. There's no point having a stock in your portfolio for 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 years. Yeah. And the one stock that you've had in there for 2 minutes has exploded because you bought the right stock and it's done the right thing and the management have executed. That stock you've had for 3 years has done bugger all. It's costing you money holding that stock, Pete.
Yeah. It's something I fight with all the time. I mean, I'm quite tolerant of my stocks misbehaving, but you know, I'm probably too tolerant with them, and it's something I battle with all the time. And
we all do. We all do, Pete. I keep banging on about cognitive dissonance and cognitive biases. You know, that with fear, greed, ego, lack of humility, lack of respect for other people, you know, 207 biases. We're all fighting every single day just to keep our stuff together, Pete. You know what I mean? So that's why the market every single day teaches you, me, and everybody else on the market a lesson. You know, and those people that say they get every single stock that they pick right, they're talking nonsense, Pete, which is why they disappear and hide behind sofas every single day that the market goes down 2 or 3 points, you know?
Yeah, it's the classic. You've got to have an approach and a strategy that's going to work. Something I noticed on the markets, which I'm actually a little bit concerned about, actually, and I'll tell you my thinking. The FTSE 100 looks good to me. You know, that move up and then the sort of sideways consolidation, that suggests to me, you know, we're probably going to see the FTSE 100 go higher over the next few months or whatever. And if you look at America, you know, the NASDAQ is not very far off its all-time high. The Dow is, you know, within spitting distance of the all-time high. And the S&P 500 the same. So they're all booming. The ones that are worrying me, and the one that really stands out, is the FTSE 250. FTSE 250 is still in, you know, I love the 13-stroke 21-day exponential moving average, EMA. I love that. You know, that did a bear cross on the FTSE 250 several weeks ago. It's very much in bear mode, and it doesn't even look like we're even close to getting a bull cross, whereas the FTSE 100 did a bull cross ages ago. The American markets, the NASDAQ, did a bull cross yesterday. The NASDAQ did, and the Dow and the S&P have all done bull crosses. So they're all looking really good. But the FTSE 250 does not look good, and the FTSE small caps the same, the, you know, the AIM all share the same. And it makes me worry because, you know, I've got big FTSE 100 stocks and I've got a nice spread of diversification, but I've got a lot of smaller stocks, and those smaller stocks are likely to suffer, you know, if we're in this environment where it feels a bit risk off still. You know, people are not happy to commit to things that are more risky. They're happy to buy the big stuff, but they don't want to buy the little stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've been going and trading a lot into the FTSE 350, and, you know, obviously incorporates the 250 at the same time, over the past year and a bit. And you're right, there's a great deal of reluctance there, Pete. If you're looking at the charts on the FTSE 250, you've got a situation where the 52-week high for the FTSE 250, which is usually the engine, really, of the FTSE All Share, you know, they've got the laggards in the 100, but the 250 is usually the strongest. It's 1 year return is -4.93, and its high, Pete, is 24,250, ironically. And the situation at the moment today is that it had a range of 22,947, 23,078, and it finished at 22,966. So actually in the lower range of today's movement. So it's a good 1,000 points, 1,500 points away from its high that it achieved. Where are we going now? We're looking at...
Sorry, was this the FTSE 250?
This is the FTSE 250, Pete. Yeah, its high was in September. Yeah?
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
oh,
its 52-week high was in September.
I didn't realise it was that long ago. I thought
Yeah,
it was more...
in September. It's not that long ago. It's only last month, but...
Oh, sorry.
It's 1,000 points away, Pete, right? So it's 24,250 is its 52-week high, and we're sitting at 22,966.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a way away. And I'm looking at the past, let's just have a look at here. This is my little cheat thing that I do, Pete. I'm looking at the strongest ones in the FTSE 250 right now, okay?
Yeah.
And the strongest over the past 6 months, here are some stocks for people to look at, strength now, right? You're looking at Indivia that we've mentioned before on our podcast, right?
INDV.
INDV, it's up 71% in the past 6 months. Meggitt's got a takeover situation going on, up 65%. Ultra Electronics, ticker symbol ULE, it's up 61%. I think that is in a takeover situation, right? Morrison's, which I held and sold, and it's in a takeover. Takeover's used more or less complete now, I think. That's up 57%. Future Holdings, I previously held that, up 55%, showing real strength continually. We mentioned Watches of Switzerland Group previously. That's up 55%. Yeah?
Yeah.
We kept saying there's going to be more and more and more takeovers. What happened? Playtech got a takeover this week, massive premium on that. Yeah, that's up 50% in the past 6 months. Most of that this week from Playtech being taken over. Vectura, which I previously held, takeover, that's sitting at 47% up. Yeah, so look at the strength of these in the FTSE 250. The losers, Pete, over the past 6 months.
Do you know what? Before we do the losers, interesting out of that list that the only two that aren't situations of a takeover, in other words, you may not be too late, are Future, FUTR, and Watches of Switzerland Group, WOSJ.
And
The others were all takeovers.
Yeah.
Probably a bit late from now.
Yeah, I mean, the bizarre thing is, we've mentioned this stock before, Pete, and it's been hammered because of supply chain problems.
Yeah.
It's AO World, right? That is down. Yeah. That is down 46% in the past 6 months, and it used to be a strong, strong company. And another one, which was used to be a favourite of a lot of people, CMC Markets. Yeah, that's down 46% as well. Yeah, Avon Protection, which everyone loved at one stage, is down 42%. And I was speaking to Phil the other day, and he called that up at about £40 or something like that, saying, not quite happy with this, and sold it out right near the very, very top and warned lots and lots of people at it. It's now sitting half of that, what he told people to get out at. Yeah, from 40, it's down now to down to £20. Yeah, at some point or other, given my concerns about who might be the next president of the USA, I think Avon Protection might do quite well, but I think for the next 6 months or 9 months, I'd be watching that very, very carefully.
Well, I always say this, you know, when a company has warned on profits, you've got a very, very strong likelihood that it's going to warn on profits again, and it will probably warn on profits for a third time. That happens so many times, and it's almost like they get battered, and they basically, I call it going into rehab. They have to go to the Priory for a while to sort of learn how to behave. And then once they've sort of like fallen like a stone in their falling knife phase and their major downtrend, they get themselves into a sideways trend where they're just range bound and basically sorting themselves out. And then eventually it will break out to the upside and there'll be some good news. It's usually the change of management makes the biggest difference. You get it breaking out to the upside, and then you get into an uptrend, and then it's like, you know, it's then off drugs, it's off alcohol, it's learned how to behave itself in public. It's not embarrassing everybody in nightclubs and falling out of taxis, showing all, you know.
You're talking about your heyday here now, aren't you, Pete? Yes, you are.
Oh, mate, I don't even remember my heyday. yeah, that's partly because I was so bloody old. But you know, it's out of the Priory, and then it's off to the races and it can do well. But, you know, again, it's what you said earlier about opportunity costs. When we give these stocks space to recover, we're running that risk that the cash isn't being used well. It could be used elsewhere.
I mean, this is the problem. You've got certain stocks. You have to look at the fundamentals. I know Jay's talks about not listening to the noise and not listening to fundamentals sometimes. But if you're going to add to a losing stock that's in mining sector or any sector for that matter, right? Sometimes you're only filling the pockets of the CEO and CFO and other people, and you're only giving them more money to keep the lights on. Yeah. And we've seen that with so many stocks which has gone into administration. I mean, Carillion, no one saw that one coming, but people lost a shed load of money. Patisserie Valliere, you know what I mean? People lost a shed load of money on that one.
That was a load of
fraud going on there. You know, right. But you've got to look sometimes at what's actually going on with this company. How far is it away from making money? You know, there's some loss-making stocks out there, Pete, that are going to do extremely well over the next 3 months, 3 years, 5 years, that people need to look at. But some of them, you've got to avoid them like the plague, you know.
I looked at AO World, mate, on ChairPad, and it's done that thing where it's gapped down, so it obviously did a profit warning at that point. And now it's just got into this sort of falling, you know, for days on end sort of thing, for about 20 days or so, 15 days or something. And the 50-day MA has turned down, and it looks, I think AO World could easily fall more easily.
It could. I mean, it was a COVID winner, mate, lockdown winner. People were buying all the stuff online, all the rest of it. Had a really good run from the obviously the capitulation of, what do you call it? February, March 2022, you know, it was sitting down at 50 pence, around that time. In fact, at a low later than February, March, it was the April, it was sitting down at 57 pence. And then it soared, mate. It was looking at £4.29, right? January, at the beginning of this year, everyone was on it. Everyone was buying it all the way up. You know, £1, £2, £3, £4.29, touching a high. Where are we? I think it was a £4.44, Pete, not so long ago at the beginning of this year. £4.44. It's now sitting at £1.54 in a heartbeat of 9 months. It's just gone wallop. Everyone and your dog's getting out. There's a lot of people, Pete, that made no money in that stock because they bought it late. They bought it at £2 and £3. And I haven't seen anyone saying on Twitter they've sold AO World, have you?
Well, exactly. With AO World, the thing that was leaping out, obviously, when it was up so high, was that the forecast PE ratings and whatever were just bonkers on it. You know, it was just so, it looked so overvalued that anyone buying when it was up there, I mean, they're just asking for troubles. You're buying immense valuation risk. When you're buying someone on a forecast PE of 40 upwards or whatever it is, you're just asking for trouble.
You are. This is why I always say be careful not to buy things on too much momentum, and always keep an eye on the PE, you know. So be mindful of that. Pete, I want to change tact a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit now about the Twin Peaks charity.
Oh, yeah.
Twin Peaks Challenge, which has done astronomically well so far. I want to thank everybody. Scrumpy 222, who's donated. Michael T., who's donated. Toying, who's donated. Ryan Wood 2609, who's donated. Elric again, who's donated to the efforts that we're doing. Joshua Thomas, who's donated. Terry, who's donating every podcast at the minute. I'm going to cover everything that he's donated again. Jay Hughes, that's donated. Johnny and Baldish, that's donated. We're sitting at the moment, ladies and gents, at supporters who have supported this particular effort at 188. We can take out at least 20 people out of that who've donated numerous times, including Elric, Scrumpy 222, Terry, who's donated numerous times, and some others that have donated several times. So we're about 160 people out of 2,500 people that listen to this podcast, 2,500 people that listen on a regular basis. We're on the way here, and we're urging people to donate £1, £2, so we can get over
say again. Yeah, it's a case of you know pound to whatever. I mean, donate whatever you can. You know, I mean, you get these podcasts. We do them every 2 weeks. You know, it's great that we can help a charity, and it's great that so many listeners have contributed and given a lot of money towards a charity. And you know, it's there's a lot of people having hard times, and you know, this is for disabled kids. It's in a sort of Leicester area and whatever, isn't it? It's like a charity for disabled children, and you know, they're having a lot of tough times. So if we can, you know, contribute and help them out, it's got to make sense. And you know, bear in mind, you know, what you learn from listening to this podcast is, you know, going to make you many multiples of £10 notes. So, so you use your cash wisely.
thank you for that, Pete. And I'd urge everyone to donate if they can. You know, I know that some people donate to other charities as well already.
That's fine. Yeah.
We're heading towards Christmas. If you can, you know, spare a couple of pounds. We get over the 15K, we're heading towards Christmas. We're sitting at £14,841. And I want to just thank everybody that's donated so far. You've been absolutely sublime with your kindness. I want to give a shout out for Elric, because he came up with another way of donating money. He organised an interview with Open Orphan, and recorded it and published it. And he asked people to pay £1.09 to listen to it straight away. And via that, he donated £95.
Oh, brilliant.
To charity again. So he's trying to innovate on that sort of situation. So thank you to everybody, including Elric. And what Elric is doing as well is that he's putting together an event on the 3rd of November in Portsmouth. And we were sponsored in the last event by the brewery company. I always pronounce it wrong. Powder Monkey Brewing Co. They've got Royal Navy armaments, and they use that to have as the brewing hub in Portsmouth. And they've got an event there on the 3rd of November. So Elric's doing that. I think it's going to help towards raising some monies again. You've got Poolbeg again, Open Orphan, InSig AI, and Opti Biotics. Should I say.
What were those epic codes for those?
Those epic codes, Pete, are POLB.
Yeah.
ORPH.
Yeah.
INSG.
INSG. Yeah.
I think it's OPTI for Optibiotics. So that's going to be at the brewery yard on the 6th of, on the 3rd of November at 6 p.m. You can get all the details from
and that's Portsmouth, yeah.
From Elric, sorry.
Yeah.
You can contact him at lemminginvestor@yahoo.com to register interest. So it's a Powder Monkey Brewing Co. Heritage Way, Gosport, is where it's going to be at. Not Portsmouth, sorry. Well, it's Portsmouth area.
Well, it's Portsmouth.
So you can get all the details there. But I'm sure he's going to be helping to raise some monies for that. It's a free event again. It's going to be a barbecue, etc., etc. Hopefully, I think there might be an indoor barbecue at this rate in November. But yeah, so just contact him. You can find him at Lemming Investor on Twitter as well. So check him out at Lemming Investor on Twitter and contact him to sign up for that event.
If people want to listen to the thing he did on Open Orphan, if they find him on Twitter or whatever and contact him and, you know, you'll give them the link or whatever to find it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that link is no longer, it's open to everyone now, but I think because he was doing it straight away.
Okay, right.
I mean, I've been asked, Pete, you know, when I put this podcast together originally, to ask people to pay for each listen, and I've not gone down that route. We've got a sponsor. The sponsor leaves me and Pete to do whatever we want on the podcast, hence the reason why we do it for free. I don't intend to ever go down the route where we'll lock this podcast up and give it to people for monies and then give it to everybody else later on. We're trying to keep it for free. And all we've asked thus far is just for people to give us feedback. And on this occasion, we're asking people to donate, you know, to the charity to support disabled children. So I'm keeping it like that. But I appreciate what Elric did in raising another £95 for us. It takes us a little closer to 15k. So power to your elbow, and thank you ever so much, Elric. And
yeah, cheers.
That's donated so far.
Yeah, thank you to everyone who's donated. It's absolutely brilliant, the response, mate. Do you want to talk about some stuff? How are we doing for time?
We're doing all right for time, Pete. I almost forgot to mention our other person that's trying to help us out here, and that's at Whystone Advisory, Alex Schlick. Yeah, remember,
yeah,
Pete?
Yeah.
So we're asking everybody to basically, all you've got to do in order to raise a pound, right, is to find Alex's account, right, and it's
on Twitter.
It's at Y Advisory, and I'll read that out for you. So it's at Whystone Advisory. So Whystone Advisory, and all you have to do is follow that account on Twitter. It's a investor relations advisory company, and they put on loads of great seminars and events for investors to get involved in and to attend. And the brilliant thing about Alex and Yellowstone Advisory is that it was actually Alex that got me involved with Tech Capital. It gave me a heads up on it, and I went away and researched it, and that's up 200-fold plus from when I purchased it. And he's involved in lots of other stocks, small and large. And they've got quite a few events and seminars coming up over the next month or so. They've always got something going on. Let me just give a heads up on some of the events that are going on over the next couple of days and weeks. And this is tomorrow. They've got, I can never pronounce it, Tulloy Oil? Tullow Oil. That's TLW. That's happening tomorrow at 1 p.m. You can sign up for that still. 3rd of November, they've got Trident Royalties. That's ticker symbol TRR. That's going on the 3rd of November at 5 p.m. That's a seminar you can get involved in. They've got a joint one with ShareSoc for Alma on the 13th of December at 12 p.m.
Alma, what's that?
HLMA, ticker symbol.
Oh.
And they've got another one with Sainsbury's jointly with ShareSoc on the 24th of November at 12 p.m. ticker symbol SBRY. So lots of, they've got the whole range from FTSE blue chip all the way down to small cap AIM stock innovative companies, and they do PR for all these companies. So you follow that account, you get to you'll donate a pound to the Twin Peaks charity, but also you'll get access to and heads up on all the different seminars that they're putting up and doing. And eventually, obviously, when we get out of lockdown, some of these will be face to face as well going forward. So follow that account, support the charity.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Pete, let's talk about some stocks, mate. Go, go, go.
Yeah, well, okay. One I'll bring up first, and it's, you know, there's a general point. I mean, this is actually a stock that I bought myself earlier this week, I think it was, yeah. And if you go on my website, look up, so it's Wheelie Dealer. So it's www.wheeliedealer.weebly.co.uk or whatever it is. If you go on there and go under the trades page, I've written quite a lot about it, and it's very clear what price I paid. And when I sell it, I'll tell you when I sell it. And I've given the, you know, the percent in my portfolio in it and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, yeah, no, it's Serica Energy. I think that's how you say it. And it's SQZ is the code. And what's got me after it is that it seems pretty obvious that the UK government and other governments, you know, Western governments in general, have gone on a headlong rush to going green and going to net zero, you know, which obviously needs to be done. But I think what's happened is because they've done this sort of headlong rush to solar and wind, which are obviously a bit intermittent. You know, it's like, you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time, the sun doesn't shine all the time. And it's sort of led to this problem that we're a bit short on energy, really. So we're short on gas, we're short on electric, and we're short on what is used to generate the electric. I mean, I was even hearing the other day that they had to fire up a coal power station again the other day. I mean, it's, the whole thing is nuts. So anyway, it just strikes me that gas prices are going to stay high, and I think there's a fair chance that gas and oil prices could go even higher than they are now, which is obviously a very nice backdrop for anyone that's producing gas and producing oil. I wanted to get more exposure. I've got Shell, RDSB, and I've got DEC, what's it called? Diversified Energy.
Yeah.
I don't even know what my own bloody stocks are called. that's the quality of this podcast, mate. Don't get me wrong. But hey, I'm just writing the epics down before I forget what I mentioned. Anyway, yeah. So I think that the backdrop is good for energy. So I wanted to get more exposure. Now, it seems like a no-brainer to buy more DEC, because I really like DEC, even though I don't know what it's called. And the dividend yield on that is ridiculous, like 10% or whatever. But the trouble is, it seems to be keep getting attacked by, like, bear raids, by shorters. They keep finding things to pick holes in, which, you know, the company just bats off, and that's happened with the latest time. But I just felt nervous to be adding more to it. So I sort of remembered that I tripped over Serica Energy, SQZ, some time ago. And the thing that really hit me was something I discovered recently, was that Peel Hunt, now it may be the house broker, so you need to bear that in mind, Peel Hunt are basically forecasting cash profits in 2021 of 287 million and in 2022 of 362 million, right? And the point is, the market cap is only just over 600 million. So you're talking there of a cash profits multiple 2 years out of less than two. Wait, what about one and a half? I mean, that's just silly cheap. I mean, obviously they've got to, they are actually producing oil because they've got what they call the BKR field, yeah, which I think is Brent Kraken and Rum or Rom or something like that, whatever it's called. So they've got these three oil fields in the North Sea that are already producing, yeah. So it's a case, you know, they've obviously got to keep that production going, but they've also got opportunities to add other wells. I think there's one called, I don't know, I don't know what the names are. They've got named, you know, other wells that they can add to that operation. They should be fairly straightforward to tie them in, is the theory. I'm obviously in oil and gas, nothing straightforward. But the point is, you know, it looks like it's going to be generating, well, pumping out a lot of gas, and it's going to, you know, the kind of prices gas is going for, I think it just looks really well placed. The other thing that helped me a lot was I noticed it's one of John Rosier, so I think he's at JIC or something on Twitter. John Rosier, who's a very good investor, I know him, and he's got 7.5% of his portfolio in it, and he's very, you know, he's held it for some time, and he, you know, and I thought he's someone I respect and someone I trust, so I'm sort of thinking, yeah, if John's in it, that certainly feeds my confirmation bias.
You have to be careful of your confirmation bias there, Pete, because John's clearly been in it a while for it to get to a 7% position. It's up 99% year to date, Pete. And
Yeah, that's
over
right.
the course of 1 year, a full calendar, 12 months, is up 140%. If we were looking at bases and talking about Jason's sort of when to buy, you'd have been looking to buy that betwixt April and May of this year when it was sitting between the 120 and the 130 sort of range, and it's currently sitting at 229. You're buying it almost at its 52-week high, Pete, which is £2.42. So if that's another base it's sitting on to take off to project to the next level, then you're buying it on the breakout, which is where you should be buying it. Are you with me?
Well, do you know what's
If you're looking
interesting
at
here?
Jason's model and strategy.
Yeah, no, what's interesting here is that it absolutely sort of, you know, went vertical between August the 31st and September the 27th. So sort of over a month, it sort of went vertical. But what's interesting now, over the last, say, 3 weeks, it is forming like a bull flag, well, a bull pennant, like a triangle. That's lovely. And that, you know, that suggests that if it can break out the all-time high, which is 242, it's going to run again. So
Yeah, that's the base. Looking for the breakout there. You're
I
looking at,
suspect if it breaks out, you'll be looking at 300.
244. Once
Yeah.
it breaks out of that, you're on your way. But
I mean,
it's a lovely chart over the last year and a half. Lovely chart.
oh,
So
I wish I was there
John's
before.
made hay on that one, mate.
I mean, looking at the fundamental side of it, I see no reason why it couldn't be 600p. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, I'll give you the, where is it? The share pad, yeah. If I just, you talk about something else, or I just beam up share
Well,
pad.
I was just going to say I'm not going to disclose the stock, but I've taken a similar sort of route, Pete, down that sort of looking at all the energy issues and all the rest of it, and I've gone down looking at what else can we do, and I've taken the route of just something a little bit slower, a bit steadier, just to generate hopefully a combined 10% from capital gains and dividends, and I've chosen a stock. Which is involved or going to be involved in the battery storage space, and I'll declare that another time. But I think the energy issue is going to be something that we're going to be talking about for quite a while, and some of those stocks are going to do extremely well. Some of the sort of smaller sort of funds that are involved in that sort of space and infrastructure sort of stuffs that are in the space are going to be sitting at premiums, so you have to be
Oh,
mindful of
yeah.
that as well. Would I buy SQZ now at the price that it's at, given the fact I'm looking at the charts and thinking, crikey, I could have had it at £1.30. I probably wouldn't buy it at this stage, Pete. But when I've done this in the past and I've gone, oh, that's too rich for me, it's gotten away from me, I'll let it go. the next time I look at it again, it's at £3. So, you know what I mean?
This is
so sometimes you've got to be brave enough to say, you know what? I'm buying this for this reason, and I'm buying it now at this price with a view to I'm going to be holding it for long enough for it to get to potentially where it goes to, because it will execute. And if it does execute, I'll be proved right. You know what I mean? So
looking
you,
at the,
you buying it at that price now is because you've taken and done your risk assessment of what it is that you want to do. No one should do and follow Pete because of Pete's risk assessment. They should follow you. They should follow themselves on their own risk assessment of what they want out of a stock or any stock we mention. Yeah?
Absolutely. I've just got SharePad beamed up. It's now, bear in mind, the numbers I mentioned before were cash profits. So the actual like PBT is obviously going to be different.
Yeah.
But even looking at that, the forecast PE, so that's for the current year we're actually in, is 3.4. The forecast PE 2 years out is 3.5. The forecast yield is 1.5%. The forecast two-year yield is 1.9%. Uh-huh. And by the way, it's got no debt. I think it's got about 16 million cash. I mean, yeah, there's risk in it. There's risk in everything. But I've got 1.5% of my portfolio in it. If it breaks out, as we discussed, I'll probably buy more, probably another 1% or something.
Okay. I want to mention this stock, Pete, because some people will already know, I try to keep a track of ex Woodford stocks, and I bought some. Some of the fund, exposure via some of his stocks. And there's a stock today which I've looked at numerous times, and I still haven't bought it. And today it came out with even more news, and it's because it's in that COPD sort of space, which I have Vectura in, and I wanted to buy another replacement for it, and I didn't. I haven't as yet. And it's a respiratory drug development company called Synergen. Yeah, it's ticker symbol NG. And that popped today because it came out with even more news after the US study recommended its inhalation treatment for severe viral lung infections. Yeah, so that's involved in that sort of space. It's looking to at the data for all its different trials. It's active 2 trial. So we're looking at what happens next with that stock. So I think that's worth investigating further and keep an eye out on that one. Year to date, it's done absolutely nothing in a sense of it's up year to date 10%. Over the 1 year term, it's minus 9%. However, it's been as low as 75, just under 75 pence, a 52 week low, and as high as 199. Today it popped on this news, 13% up at 167. It's got a market cap of just under 296 million, but it's an ex-Woodford favourite. It's one of them, again, that he was looking to have in various portfolios before he got fired. And it's been as high as £2.50 back in August of last year. It's currently sitting at 169. In March lows of November 2020, it was sitting at 77 pence, for obviously because of different data flows, some good, some bad. The market goes up and down with different data on that stock. So it's one that's going to be volatile. Has it got
Is it pre-revenue and stuff or what?
Yeah.
What I'm a bit confused by, I'm just looking at SharePad for it, yeah. SNG, Synergen, it's got forecast yield 2.4% and 2 year forecast yield 3%. That can't be right, can it? That's curious.
That's a good question.
I mean, that's not because of SharePad. I mean, SharePad get their data feed from wherever and then they clean it up and stuff, and they're generally very good at cleaning it up, but that looks very suspicious to me.
No, it's never paid a dividend. You've got SNG, the ticker symbol there, Pete. It's never. I don't think it's ever paid a dividend. Revenue is zero. It's just a future sort of, will this get to? It's a development stage thing, Pete. So it's got to.
Yeah, I've got the right one.
Beyond that, to actually generate revenue.
How weird.
So it's one to keep an eye on.
Hey, I've got. Mate, I've got some IPOs to mention. There's
Go for
several.
that, Pete, because we're at 1 hour and 2 minutes, so we're going to call
Oh,
it in
yeah.
after you've done this.
Right, I'll rattle through these then. Well, the most exciting one, actually, I should leave the most exciting one to last, shouldn't I?
Leave
No,
that to last, mate. Go for that.
actually, no, I'm going to do it first because it's probably the most crappiest. I'm sorry.
You're a tinker, mate. Come on. Go
Sorry.
for it.
PodPoint. That's what it's called, PodPoint. And it's
Okay.
basically electric vehicle charging. And you know, I think it's the biggest or the second biggest provider of charge points in the UK, and they specialize in doing them at like, you know, supermarkets and at the gym and, you know, at your workplace, whatever. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, I think the problem with that one is that everyone's going to be so excited about it, aren't they? People are going to go crazy for it, you know?
I'm just putting up some details about it. The thing I like about this, Pete, is that it's said current major shareholder is EDF, so it's got a good backer
Oh
there.
yeah, I
It's
should have
not a little
mentioned.
flippant little tiny little whoever it is. You know, other
Yeah.
people have got Shell, other people have got BP. The fact they've got EDF as a major shareholder,
And they're going to hold something like 25% even after IPO, I think.
So the fact they've got them on board. Well, EDF will retain a stake of more than 50% following admission, so that's a good call.
Okay, yeah.
So that could be interesting, Pete. It's one of them I'd keep an eye on, making sure they don't run away with themselves once the IPO has taken place. But that's an interesting call. EVs, mate, you know they're coming, whether people
Well,
like it or not. I know you like your petrol guzzling cars, Pete, but it's coming.
I like, mate, I like the bonkers acceleration that EV's going to give. And I'll tell you what, mate, as soon as there's a half decent EV with a bit of range on it, I'll really get interested.
You'll get interested. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. But yeah, it's an interesting IPO, Pete. What's the
You
next one you
know,
got?
I'll do this one next, which I think personally is the most exciting. Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
This is a company called Pro Cook, and it's a family run. It's been run by the family for 25 years, and it's a proper established real business. I think it's very much online, and it's like a specialty quality cookware kind of company. I mean, it sounds really dreadfully boring, doesn't it? But it's often these kind of really boring ones that actually turn out to be the best investments. And the thing that's good about it as well, it's not even raising any cash at the IPO because it don't need no money. And
What?
it's profitable. It's a really good business, apparently. And I was talking to a mate down a pub, Ian Palmer, last Friday. That's at ILP300 on Twitter. And he said to me he knows Pro Cook, and it's a really good quality outfit.
They're not raising any money.
No, I don't need it, mate. Well, because you know, it's a proper business. It's been running for ages. It's very much a family thing, you know, with a family are committed to it. And I think part of the reason it's IPOing is they want to give more options for family members to be able to sell the shareholdings and things like that if they want to, and just to, you know, get more capital, etc. If they need access to capital, but I don't think they need it, you know.
I'll just pull some data up here, Pete. It comes after the company's revenue jumped 37% to 53.4 million in the latest financial year, whilst EBITDA swelled by 246% to 13.3 million.
So that's effectively cash profit, EBITDA, right?
Wow, they're not raising any money, and they could have done, and other companies would have done. Pete, as you know, we've spoken about family-owned companies in the past, and if that is one of those, that's another legit family-owned companies. You look at what happened with the likes of other companies that have been family-owned, you know, end on the market and stay on the market for a long time. They tend to make sure they look after the ownership of that company long term, and therefore the shareholders who happen to be the family as well. That could be, mate. I'll keep an eye on that one. Thanks for the heads up.
Well, I mean,
That's a very interesting one. It's
yeah.
boring, and I like. You should have boring in your portfolio. You don't need to have something blazing the lights out every day. You know, people talking about the stock's going down 15, 20% every other day. It's like, mate, you don't need that kind of headache. You need to be able to sleep at night, Pete. You
Yeah, and
know?
this has the feel of the kind of stock that, you know, tuck it away 5, 10 years, I bet you it'll really perform. And it'll probably pay a dividend, I suspect.
I agree.
Because families families like getting their little dividend payout.
Yeah, that's a very, very good call, mate. Well done. Okay, go on.
And the other one that's slightly unusual, I saw this week, and this is a company called Life Cycle REIT, R-E-I-T. So it's a real estate investment trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically going, its intention is to buy property, buy buildings that are linked to, you know, drug, anything to do with health, you know, drug development and sort of be laboratories and all sorts of stuff. And they actually say in the thing, they're deliberately going to target the sort of the Cambridge area where they're mad for that.
It's Cambridge, Silicon Valley, yeah.
No, was it? What do they call it? Got another name for it, haven't they? Like, I don't know, whatever. There's a name for it. Anyway, whatever it is, up near Cambridge, where there's loads of these sort of health companies and they develop the viruses and whatever, yeah, vaccines and whatever else they do. And the other interesting thing with that one is it does say they intend to pay a dividend, but they also target in excess of 10% CAGR. So in excess of 10% CAGR, which is, you know, they've got high expectations there.
Okay, I've saw something unusual today, Pete. I'm just going to mention this. It's probably not a stock that people can buy anymore. But I saw this very unusual RNS today from BHP Group. Yeah, it used to be Billiton. Yeah, remember?
Yeah.
So ticker symbol's BHP, but I'm not referring to BHP as such. I'm referring to a very, very small company by the name of Noront, right? And it's a Canadian listed company on the TSXV platform. And this company is sitting now after the improved offer from BHP. From 24 cents, Canadian cents of 24 cents, right? The improved offer today is at 75 cents. Right?
Whoa.
It's a premium of 213% from when this first started. And a 36% premium to what BHP previously offered for it at 55 cents. Yeah? So they're fighting to get the assets of this little company from another company called Wailu, right? And basically, Noront is a Canadian-based mining company which has got assets in and around what they call an area called the Ring of Fire, which is located around North Ontario in Canada. So the reason why I'm bringing that to people's attention is for them to consider doing some research, because I know we've got lots of people that like mining stocks and speculative stocks and all the rest of it, is to have a little and do a bit of digging and have a look at what is around and other listed companies, Canadian or otherwise, that have got assets in and around the Ring of Fire area of Ontario, northwestern Ontario, yeah? The Noront Eagle's Nest deposit sort of area. And have a look, are there any other listed companies around that area? Because if they're fighting for that particular asset and that particular company, the likelihood is that other companies will be looking at that area too, and assets in and around that area. They want to look at what's going on there. Copper, nickel, chromite, and so on and so forth. Zinc, yeah? These are assets that are all going to be needed, Pete, going forward, for this electric vehicle, battery charging, so on and so forth. Going forward.
Well, as you say, it's a good idea. If they're, you know, snapping things up at that kind of premium, I mean,
13% premium, mate, you know.
Incredible.
We had Arena as well taken out this morning.
ARE. Yeah. Been a tough one for holders, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, so the holders have been absolutely battered on that.
I think if I was holding that, I think it'd be like blessed release, you know.
Some people have been holding for a year and a half, Pete, and it's still not getting what they would hope. It's gone from a couple of pence, 11 pence, and now that's being taken out at 21 pence. But you know, as I said before, it's assets. It's what are the assets? It's a property company that does various events in and around the world internationally.
They rent out like you know, they arrange the seating and stuff for golf. I
So.
mean, it's, you know, you imagine in this environment with COVID around and that, it's had a tough time, hasn't it? And I remember they had a bit of a scandal in the US a couple of years ago where there was a sort of US division that had been doing some kind of fiddle or something, and you know.
They've had their issues. I think the point to make here with this one and with other stocks is keep an eye out when somebody just lumps in very, very quickly and buys up 5, 10, 15, or 24%, I think it was in this case, last year, last April, May, or whatever it was. You know, Saudi or whatever overseas sort of investor comes in and goes, right, I'll buy 24% of that. Because they're looking beyond 2021, 2022. And, you know, they're buying these assets for a reason, Pete. So that's always a good indicator. So keep an eye on the RNSs. Read the RNSs fully, so you understand what's going on regardless of whether it's a new buy for somebody else or just a fundraising going on. Read the RNS fully so you understand what the implications are.
Yeah, makes sense, mate. Right, better call it a day, sir.
We're going to call it there, folks. We're in 75 minutes before we added any bits and pieces to it. I want to thank everybody for the feedback that they've given us, good, bad, and indifferent regarding Twin Peaks Investing 59 with Jace. I'm really glad that some people enjoyed it. For those that didn't enjoy it, you know, we're going to have Jace back at some stage. People have requested that he comes back. So hopefully, if he can expand a bit more and talk about some other elements of trend following. For those that didn't understand it or didn't appreciate it, they may appreciate it some more next time. They may not appreciate it that the fact we're having him on for a second time. C'est la vie. You know, take care of yourselves. Keep an eye out for what you can do for others. Remember that the most important element of investing or trading is mastering your own psychology. Yeah? Because the people are out there that are saying, I'm buying, I'm buying, I'm buying, I'm buying. Right? They're going to come out in a heartbeat and say they've sold it. What are you going to do about the stock if you're not got any conviction in it and they didn't have any conviction in it and the only reason that you bought it was because you didn't have the psychology enough to not follow them? So think about it. Do your own research. Don't listen to what Pete and I have said or anybody else has says. Go and do your own research because some people out there are only in it to influence you to buy the stock that they're in. Please stop it. Yeah? Do your own research. Make your own mistakes. Do your own learning and be a success because you can be. Because Pete and I started out 20 odd years ago, right? And we started out making mistakes. We're still making mistakes, but we're trying to get better. You, me, and everyone else can get better and we'll learn from our mistakes and we'll learn more from our mistakes than we do our successes. Take care of yourselves. God bless. Do what you can.
See
All
you
the
later.
best. See you later.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with Sharepad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.